Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events relating to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Welcome to our program tonight, Polygamy, What Love Is This? We welcome all of our new viewers that are here tonight. We are a live program broadcasting from Salt Lake City, Utah, and a telephone call-in program. My name is Doris Hansen, and I am the host for the program. Our telephone number is 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820. If you would rather communicate with us by email, our email address is tv@aboutpolygamy.com. And we do appreciate all of your responses, and we do invite you to telephone into the program tonight or email us your concerns and your opinions of polygamy and of our show on polygamy. Our webpage is whatloveisthis.tv, www.whatloveisthis.tv. You might tell friends and relatives, people that you know who are not unable to receive our program on their television, that they can go to that website and watch all of our previous programs there on streaming video. For more information about our ministry, on how we help polygamists and what we do and what we're all about, you can go to our website, shieldandrefuge.org, shieldandrefuge.org. Our toll-free number is 877-425-9993. And if you or someone that you know is in a polygamy group, and if you're being abused or molested, or if you're being forced into something you don't want to do, please call our toll-free number. If it's an emergency, please call 911. But we are here to help you if you're in a polygamy group or if you've left a group and you just have questions and concerns that we can help you with. Give us a call. We would love to do whatever we can to assist you. We do have a discussion group that we meet monthly, and it's going to meet next time on April 27th, Monday evening at 6:30. It is a non-confrontational, very quiet, helpful group, and we'd love to have you come. If you're interested, just email us or call in your contact information, and we'll give you the details. We also have a DVD that we would like to give to anyone who's in a polygamy group, or if you've left a group, if you've been in a group and you've left, we'd love to send you this DVD absolutely free, no strings attached. It's entitled Lifting the Veil of Polygamy, and we just need to know what address to send it to. Just contact us either by email or telephone, and we will send you this DVD absolutely free. It's been very helpful to many people who have watched it. Next week, we have a special program that has been pre-recorded. Several weeks ago, Susan Schmidt was here for an interview, and Susan is from the LeBaron Polygamist Group. And while she was here, we taped a program on the blood atonement dogma of the Irvel LeBaron Polygamist Group many, many years ago. You may recall, you may not. I don't know. It's been quite some time. But we did talk about that, and we have a lot of good information on the murder of Dr. Ruelen Allred, by one of Irvel LeBaron's polygamous wives, Rena Shanoff. Now, Susan Schmidt and Rena Shanoff are cousins. Susan was married to Verlin LeBaron, who was the brother to Irvel LeBaron, who had Rena as one of his wives, and it was a tangled web, and we're just going to sit and talk about it and talk it through. I think you'll find it very interesting, so please join us next week for that interview, and then the following week we'll be back live again and interviewing two more of Joseph Smith's wives, two of the young girls that he married. Lucy Walker, he married her when she was 17, and Helen Marr Kimball, he married her as a plural wife when she was 14 years old. On June 27th of 1844, Joseph Smith was in the Carthage jail, and he had, when he was there, there was a mob who came to kill him, And I think most of us know the story. There was a gunfight that ensued. Joseph Smith shot three men, killed two of them, and then Joseph Smith himself was shot and killed. When Joseph Smith died, he left behind at least 34 widows. Two of those widows, plural wives, we are going to dramatize tonight with two young ladies who have agreed to play the parts of these two women, Eliza Partridge and Emily Partridge. All of the information that we do in this interview, the questions and the answers, are taken from a book entitled In Sacred Loneliness, written by Todd Compton. We are not taking any liberties with the text. When Todd Compton wrote this book, he had all the references, he has all the footnotes. All of this is taken from historical accounts and journals. And like I said, we are not adding to the text, we're not making it more than the way he put it. We just thought our viewers should know what Joseph Smith did when he took all of his plural wives. So I'd like to introduce to you the two women who are playing the parts of Eliza and Emily Partridge. Eliza Maria Partridge, is being played by Elizabeth Linton. Thank you. Thank you very much. We hope you enjoy your time playing Eliza. And Emily Partridge is being portrayed by Dee Dee Larson. And thank you. This is courageous of you, and we really appreciate. And we know that you're going to have a lot of information to share to our viewers about what it was like to be pursued and proposed to and married as a plural wife by Joseph Smith. On December 11th of 1830, when Eliza Partridge was 10 years old, her father, Edward, was baptized into the Mormon Church. 2 months later, Edward became the first bishop of the Mormon Church. Joseph Smith called him to move west to the new Zion, they called it, in Missouri, a couple of months later. So he uprooted his family and they started their trek west. The subsequent sacrifices that they went through would last a lifetime. And he and his family's troubles were just beginning when they took that initial move. Two of his daughters, Eliza Maria and Emily Dow Partridge, would be taken as plural wives to Joseph Smith. And then later, they would ruthlessly be shut out of their home and become homeless because he wouldn't stand up against Emma, who was overwhelmed with jealousy over Joseph Smith's polygamy. There are many victims that take place in a polygamous scenario. We don't have time to cover all of the details that this story entails. We only have time to carry the basic points and to make the point that we want to make, that polygamy is really not a very pleasant experience and certainly is not from a God who loves us. Eliza is the oldest. Eliza was born April 10th of 1820, and Emily is almost 4 years younger, and she was born February 28th of 1824. So we're going to ask our questions first with Eliza. So, Eliza, let's get to know you just a little bit so our viewers will know one of Joseph Smith's wives. In the summer of 1839, your family moved to Nauvoo, and after they had already been moved several times, Joseph Smith had called them to go west, and there was a lot of persecution that was going on with the Mormons during that time. And so they moved to Nauvoo after they escaped a lot of that persecution. You were 19 years old. And Emily, your sister, was 15 at the time. In May of 1840, two tragedies took place in your family. Would you tell us about them?
Well, at the time, I was teaching in a nearby town, and I had received word that Harriet was sick, so I rode all night.
And Harriet is your...
My sister.
Your sister.
So I rode all night to get home, and the next day she had passed away due to the illness. And during that time, I was sick as well. And about 10 days later, my dad had passed away, and I was so sick I couldn't even go to his funeral.
Couldn't go to the funeral, okay. And so so within 2 weeks, your sister and your father, one of your sisters and your father, both passed away. Your father had been a very important man in the Mormon church. He was the first bishop, mm-hmm. and he had served on several missions. Would you tell us how he died? What was wrong?
Well, like you had mentioned earlier, we traveled, we moved constantly, and we never really had a firm home. And so he was just overworked, whether it was trying to provide for his family or just work in the church. And he was actually in the middle of building us a house and trying to move us in when he had caught the illness. And he was just so weak from exhaustion physically that he wasn't able to mm-hmm. overcome mm-hmm. the illness. So
he couldn't fight it off. Mm-mm. Plus, he had gone on several missions for the church, too.
Right.
He was back and forth a lot on that as well. Because of your father's prestige in the Mormon church, and of course being the first mm-hmm. bishop, your family was more or less in the elite of the early Mormon society, and yet you were struggling in poverty after your father died. Mm. So you and your sister Emily had to hire out. Would you tell us about that?
Yes, actually, we were actually very poor, and it was just a hardship actually when father had died. And so Emily and I, we began to look for work, and I actually got a job at a tailor shop, and I earned about $3 a week.
$3 a week, mm-hmm. wow.
And that really helped Mom out quite a bit and the other kids. And so we continued to look for work, and we found work with the Smiths, Joseph and Emma, and they hired us.
Okay.
And so we got to live in their home, and they're very kind. They didn't pay us, but we were allowed to live there and eat. Mm-hmm. And that type of provision was made. So
you were living in the Smiths' home and mm-hmm. a board and room, and that, okay. And you were 20 years old, I think, about
20.
That time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, Emily, let's get to know you just a little bit here. You're just almost 4 years younger than Eliza.
Right.
But you kept better journals than Eliza did, so we have a little bit more information, at least of your deep feelings of some of what took place. And so when your mother, let's go back to when you first moved and your mother sold the property. Mm-hmm. Joseph Smith had called the family West, and your mother sold the property at a huge loss, evidently.
Yes.
She just sold it to get out of it, and the neighbors actually thought it was ridiculous that she took such a huge loss.
Yeah.
And then by herself, she moved the five young children.
By herself.
Out of there, and that took the journey west, and the tragedy took place on that journey. Would you explain that?
Indeed. Well, we started out with a loss. The money that we were supposed to have collected from our property, we hardly saw any of it, and that was just the first tragedy. And then on a keelboat to our destination, our chest of belongings, anything we had left, was stolen and ransacked and then tossed overboard. We pretty much saw it floating down the river next to us. So it was just the beginning of our traumas.
And the money that she had from the sale of the property was stolen as well,
right,
by someone else.
From one of the brethren is what we suppose.
From one of the brethren.
Yeah,
I believe it says that one of the did that.
Yeah.
It was a rough life. Now, pioneer life was rough for everybody, not just the Mormons, certainly the Mormons too, but pioneer life was just a rough time to be living. You were baptized at 8 years old?
Yes.
In the Mormon church?
Yes, in February, actually, freezing cold in the creek next
Didn't
to our
have
cabin.
To break the ice to get
Yeah.
I can't imagine. You know, that happened a lot in those days. I can't imagine.
It's cold anyway, but in February it was pretty frigid.
I wonder you didn't get deathly ill from that. In 1839, malaria broke out.
Right.
And we talked about the illness there. It broke out in a lot of the Mormon camps. And malaria broke out all over the place. Again, this wasn't just the Mormons that suffered from these kinds of things. But in your family, it broke out. And very many people in your family became ill. Your sister Harriet and your mother died. But a few months before the death of your father, he was appointed another special position in the church. What was that?
He was made bishop of the Upper Nauvoo Ward, and in October 5th of 1839, only a few months later,
he died.
He died. It wasn't lasting long, but
yeah. He was
still
overworked.
Kind of
he
was overworked. Yes.
He was not only the first bishop of the Mormon Church, but he also became the bishop of the Upper
Nauvoo
Ward.
Yes.
So he was a very big and important man. He was an important man.
Yeah.
Overworked. Some people say that that often these women would become church widows because the fathers or the husbands would have to be gone so much. Now, his death caused the financial hardship that we had talked about. Mm-hmm. So you and Eliza moved in with the Smith home. Did you enjoy living and working in the Smith home?
It was good for a time. It was really good. They treated us really well. We got to go to their parties. We got to go horseback riding. They set us up in specialized singing schools.
Wow.
We got to take care of their baby, which was kind of a privilege because we were used to younger siblings, so that was kind of a thrill. And but yeah, it was a special privileged time. We felt quite important. And
although you weren't getting paid, you still got your room and board.
Right.
And
we lived
and
quite
extracurricular activities.
Yeah. fun times.
Good.
For a while.
Well, in April of 1842, you and your sister joined the Relief Society of Nauvoo, and again, that's an elite status that you were able to enjoy. But about that time, Joseph Smith began teaching you something in particular. Would you please detail us what that was?
Yes, he was starting to, I was 18 at the time, and he wanted to speak with me. In fact, he came to me and said, if you will not betray me, I will tell you something for your benefit. And days passed, and that provided no opportunity for him to actually speak with me. And but I was getting signals, and soon I was approached with a letter that I was told to burn immediately after reading. But after private prayer, decided that it was probably not a good thing to accept what I thought to be a romantic letter from not only my host, but my employer, my father figure, and our spiritual leader.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I declined and shot him down pretty quickly, and he didn't bother me for a few months after that.
It's kind of gutsy to shoot down the leader of the church, don't you think?
Well, it just didn't seem appropriate, I guess. We were working under his wife, who had treated us very well, and it was just, it felt at the time the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. Glad you had the courage to do that. Now, Smith wanted you to keep this entire incident secret anyway. And in fact, you were warned not even to tell your sister, Eliza, or your mother.
Right.
How did that required secrecy affect you?
It actually troubled me quite a bit. Eliza and I were really, really good friends and always told each other everything. We were a very close family. And I was so afraid to betray the man of God, our spiritual leader, the prophet, Joseph Smith. It was, just couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it, okay. Well, it seemed like Joseph Smith was a little bit nervous about this too.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to be sure that you would be able to keep the secret, so he tested your resolve to keep quiet. Would you tell us about that?
Yeah. He sent Elizabeth Durfee to question me about anything I knew about plural marriage, or if I'd been approached with the topic, or if I knew anything about it in my household, or anything like that. And it was kind of an odd questionnaire, but... Yeah,
but you
held resolve.
You didn't. Yeah. You didn't fail his little secrecy attempt there. Huh? He didn't fall into the trap.
No. Nope. His secret was completely safe with me.
But at the time, you couldn't know that Elizabeth Durfee was married to Joseph Smith too.
Yeah.
Right then and there. In fact, she was one of the wives that he had. I think he had two wives that were actually recruiters for him. And they would go around recruiting women to become his plural wives, and Elizabeth Durfee was one of them.
Yeah.
So you didn't know that she was plural married to him, or that she was a friend of plural marriage.
No idea.
Okay, after a bit of time passed, you finally gave in to your desire to tell your sister Eliza about Joseph Smith's proposal. What did this do to her?
As much of a reprieve as it was to finally tell my sister, it sent her into deep depression and pretty much just flattened her. It was hard to tell her, but
I'm sure. And it must have felt darn good to get it off your shoulders, too. So your first introduction, then, to plural marriage was when you learned that Joseph Smith had approached your sister as a plural wife, and she's younger than you. Mm-hmm. And so this obviously upset you. Would you like to weigh in on this, what this did to you?
What can you say? You know, we lived in the same house and we shared secrets, and it was devastating. I was depressed for several days, and it was just a great trial in my life, first of all. But she had convinced me that she had received a testament and that she was sure this is what God wanted her to do. So I supported her.
But you weren't a friend of polygamy from the beginning. From the first time you heard of it, you were not for it at all. It's not something that set good with you. It's interesting that it didn't set good with any woman, any of the women that I've read. It, at first, it did not set good with you. And I think that's because there's something deep down in our heart that tells us that it is definitely wrong. Mm-hmm. Okay, Emily, what was the reason that you had that abrupt turnabout? At first, you were adamantly against it, and then all of a sudden, you're for it?
Yeah, well, Joseph had renewed our courtship, and I began to see things in a different light completely as he was teaching me the principle of polygamy, and he referred to it actually as celestial marriage. Mm-hmm. And basically what he said was that I was already, according to what God had revealed to him, I was already his possession, his property, and what my duty was to just comply and
so that was his tactic.
That was his tactic.
He claimed you as his possession.
Right. In the name of God, in what he thought would, you know, what I guess we just wanted to follow the prophet, and he told us that this was from God.
I wonder how that makes a girl feel when they find out that God has secretly given you as a possession to a married man. A week later, your marriage took place. Uh-huh. Would you, it was quite by surprise to you. You didn't expect it to come by so quickly.
Well, it was actually not what I planned my marriage to be. I was asked by Elizabeth Durfee to go to the prophet's house. Well, actually, it was going to be Kimball's house that night. And I asked her what it would be about, and she said, "I think Joseph wants to make you one of his wives." So I was scared a little bit, but I just, like I said, I wanted to follow the prophet. And so I wore my washclothes, just put on a cloak, went to the Kimball house, and saw the children there, and no sign of Joseph or Kimball until a little bit later. And then they showed up. They excused the kids to go elsewhere. I suppose they just didn't want to expose the kids to something like this, and they told me to call another day because Violet wasn't in, and so I abruptly turned around and I started heading back home, and I was running as fast as I could possibly go. Kimball tried to stop me with every effort. I heard him calling behind me, and he was chasing me down, and it was terrifying to think that there was a grown man chasing me in the dark, in the cold, and to the point of being on top of me just to stop me. So he escorted me back to the home where the ceremony took place, and it was not what I had pictured. It was quick, and it wasn't conventional in any sort of way.
And very top secret.
Very top secret. In the dark.
In your washclothes.
And nobody to witness it except for Kimball, and it was just very, very quick, and I don't remember much that Joseph said, but we both went our own ways that night.
That night you went your own way?
Yeah.
And that was probably a disappointing thing. Is this a wedding night? Yeah.
I wasn't even sure if the marriage took place, but yeah.
It was
awkward.
Now, however, this is a personal question, but because we have a lot of people who doubt that there was a sexual dimension to Joseph Smith's plural marriages, did you have sexual relationships with him?
The evening after we consummated our marriage, and several times after that.
And several times after that, okay. How old were you, and how old was he when this took place?
I was 19, and he was 37.
37? Almost double your age.
Right.
Okay. And neither your mother nor your sister.
Nobody knew.
No one knew that this took place. Okay. Now, we're going to go back to you, Eliza, and get some information out of you. I would like to invite you to telephone and call in. If you have any questions about Emily or Eliza Partridge or Joseph Smith's wives, would you please call in at 801-973-TV20. We will be answering the phones in a little bit, and we'd love to hear from you, your remarks, your questions, or your concerns or opinions about our interview tonight. Okay, Eliza. You didn't keep as good journals as your sister, but we are able to get some information because of other people's journals of what took place. We don't know how Smith courted you, but 4 days later, something happened in your life. Would you tell us about that?
I married the prophet.
You married Joseph Smith 4 days after she did. Okay. Did he pursue you? How did he propose?
Well, he did teach me about celestial marriage, and I had previously learned of it through Emily, and it kind of got me thinking as well, and I just had such a confidence in him as being a prophet of God that I thought it was a privilege to be sealed to him for time and eternity. And that's what I based my decision on.
Okay. And you did not know she had been married to him as of yet. So who was present at your ceremony?
Heber Kimball and Orson Hyde.
Orson Hyde. Okay. And Heber Kimball performed the marriage, I think he's the one that performed her marriage. How did your sister Emily feel about this marriage?
Oh, she didn't know.
Your mother?
No. Everything was such a secret in the polygamy realm that neither one of us knew we had married the same man.
And the husband of the woman whose home you were living in and being treated so well and watching your children.
What was I thinking?
A couple of months later, this secret was revealed, but in a very twisted sort of way. Would you explain that?
Well, Joseph began to make Emma comply with the principle of plural marriage, and he allowed her to choose wives that she would want for her husband. And so fortunate for Joseph, and to his surprise, she chose the two of us. And just because we've had a great relationship with her, and we lived in her house and worked for her, so she knew us. And it was just an opportunity for Joseph to know us. He already knew us. So
she agreed to his plural marriage if she could choose the wives, and she chose you two.
Right.
And nobody knew that you two were already married to him.
Right.
Even you two didn't know the other one was. Well, so Joseph Smith went along with, he didn't tell her then that you were already married to him.
No, he just thought it would be best to just have another ceremony.
Okay. So you had another ceremony. What happened, Emily, when this arrangement was made? Emma wasn't told that Smith was already married to you, so
no.
What happened?
No, Joseph thought it was best not to tell her, which we always thought was so weird. It was just really strange to the both of us, and it was only the ceremony was performed by Joseph's
Masonic friend,
right? Judge James Adams,
the Masonic friend.
The Masonic friend. Yeah.
He wasn't even a Mormon.
No.
And a non-Mormon plural married Joseph Smith. Isn't that odd?
Yeah. Seeing everything about this
weird?
Was just so different to us. It wasn't something that we thought would.
Mm-hmm. That is very strange. That I find that very intriguing.
Yeah.
And we did it together.
So you were married together. Now everybody knows that you're married, but nobody knew that you were previously already
married. Right. Not even between the two of us.
Okay. So what happened after you were both sealed to him? And now you both knew that you were married to her husband, she was married to your husband, you were both married to Emma's husband. What happened?
That's kind of where our troubles started. Mm-hmm. It was hard. For a couple months, I guess it was okay. And then it just seemed like everything went downhill from there. Emma had a stroke of jealousy, and living conditions became very awkward, actually really brutal. We were treated pretty poorly from then on out,
mm-hmm.
and asked to leave eventually,
mm-hmm.
Kind mm-hmm. of forced out of our nice little
out of your home.
Home, mm-hmm. yeah.
A note here, Richard Van Wagner is a Mormon historian, and he's suggesting that Emma had found out that there truly was a sexual dimension to his plural marriages, and she was just going insane with jealousy. And of course, that only makes sense. We can't fault her because she had no idea that he really would be having more than just a celestial, more eternal marriage here. So he just dropped you like a hot potato, more or less, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Joseph hadn't stood up to Emma.
No. Nope, he didn't stand up to Emma, which we thought was really weird. A prophet of God being revealed constantly that plural marriage in and of itself is okay, and not even helping Emma understand that this was something that he had received from God as any kind of revelation or anything like that. So basically, we went homeless and poverty-stricken. Homeless again.
And poverty stricken uh-huh. again. Mm. Okay. Okay. We're getting towards the end of our interview. We still got a little more left to go, but we're looking forward to your phone calls to call in and weigh in on this issue of Joseph Smith and his plural wives. We do have a call waiting. I'll get to that call in just a moment. Eliza, after Joseph Smith's death in 1844, you're now a widow of the prophet. And you become married to another polygamist, Amasa Lyman, just 2 months later in mm-hmm. September. He was a member of the 12 apostles, which gave you elite status in the church again. Was this marriage any easier, this plural marriage any easier than the one with Joseph Smith?
Well, I don't know if you'd even call it a marriage because of the loneliness. He was never around. He never saw his children born. Also, just the poverty he never provided. And it was very, very difficult to have to provide for your 5 children and yourself and mm-hmm. make sure there's food on the table and a house. And I even ended up building my own house one day.
Oh, goodness. How many wives did Amasa take for himself?
He took 8.
8 wives.
Including myself and my sister, Carolyn, younger sister. And
3. So again, you were married to a man who was married to one of your sisters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And 3 of them actually left because it was so difficult, uh-huh. so lonely.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Well, Eliza went west with the Mormons after she married Amasa. And like she said, her life was lonely and sad, and she often wondered, actually, if it would be better if she just died because her life was so miserable. She died on March 2nd, 1886. She was only 65 years old. She had some kind of a lung disease, a pneumonia, or some congestion of the lung. It's a sad and it's a lonely life that polygamy forces upon women, not just in those days, but it also does so today. We have one call from Joe and Sandy. We'll take that, and then Emily will kind of wind up your life there. So we'll take Joe's call. Hello, Joe.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
How are you today?
Well, just fine. How are you, Joe?
Yes, the question I had was, do the ladies actually believe that the LDS Church today, even though it preaches against polygamy, that secretly they would wish that the public would leave the issue alone and let it, and they actually secretly support polygamy in Utah?
Is that a question or a statement?
That's a question. I mean, I'm curious because I've seen from my LDS friends two sides to that. I have some great LDS friends that are firmly against it. And then I have some great LDS friends that are, that ain't none of your business. And leave them alone. They're not doing any harm.
Well, so maybe.
I suspect that there may be some elements in the church hierarchy that feel the same way.
Well, it's hard to speak for someone else, of course, and the hierarchy doesn't come out with any statements about that. It would be interesting to do maybe a poll and get some LDS people to weigh in on that, do a show on it even. I do know that I have heard from different sources, maybe missionaries and different sources like that, that they are looking forward to when polygamy will be reinstated. They think it will be reinstated during the millennium. But and how it'll weigh in with the courts if polygamy is made legal eventually, it might be what the Mormon Church would do at that point. You know, it's going to be an interesting situation to watch.
Well, that's why I had this sense that back behind all the opposition, there is still support, but that the opposition is sort of tacit and has to be there in face of the environment, the political environment in society.
Currently,
and mm-hmm. some of it, of course, is due to the fact that there are some tax issues that some of the polygamous families enjoy that other people don't like. But I think that's their only opposition.
Well, you know, it's still in their books. It's still on their books. And so if polygamy became legal, it would be very easy for them to go back to living it because they never did take it off their books.
Well, wasn't it a revelation and not the Word of God?
Well, Section 132 of their Doctrine and Covenants still has the polygamy revelation there. They haven't taken that out. So
I mean, the doing away with it, wasn't that done by a revelation?
No, it was done by an idea that maybe it'd be a good thing to do that. But it really, they didn't call it a revelation from God.
Okay, well, I don't criticize anybody one way or the other. I'm a very firm friend of the LDS religion. I'm not so firm a friend of the LDS as a political party.
Well,
religion, I love their family values and the way they raise their people.
Okay, what we stand for here is the truths according to what the Bible teaches, and so that's what we go by. But we do thank you for your call, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye. Okay, Emily, let's go back and finish your what happened with you. Less than a year after you were forced to leave the home and you were made a widow by Joseph Smith, did you remarry?
Yes. Yes, I married Brigham Young.
Wow.
Yeah. I became a wife
from one leader
the
to the next.
Prophet, yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy your marriage with Brigham Young?
Kind of like her second marriage, it wasn't really a marriage. He was rich and he was elite. He was politically, you know, everything about him was of higher status, but we didn't really reap any of the benefits of that.
Hmm.
Kind of a one tragedy to the next sort of
thing. In your diary, in your notes of your journal, you mentioned that it's a very lonely life. Would you want to share any of those
Well,
feelings with us?
I have a little portion of it right here. Can I read?
Sure.
From my, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Can I find anything so pleasant that I could wish to live it over again or even to dwell upon it in thought with any degree of satisfaction? No, I cannot. My life has been like a panorama of disagreeable pictures. As I scan them over one by one, they bring no joy, and I invariably wind up with tears. I have been heart-hungry all my life, always hoping against hope, until the years are nearly spent, and hope is dead for this life, but bright for the next. And then I ask myself, what great or good thing have I done that I could hope for better things in the next world? And I can only sum up in one word, and that is, I am woman. Or if that is not enough, I am a mother, and still more, I am a spiritual wife. Some will not know what it is to be a woman, a mother, or an unloved spiritual wife.
An unloved spiritual wife. What a hopeless. That's so sad. Isn't
yeah.
that sad? And she didn't even have hope for the next life.
No.
She wondered. And that's the beauty of the biblical gospel, is that we can know We can know, if we have the truth, we can know there's hope in the next life. We don't have to wonder. That is a very sad life. Polygamy really made some sad stories for people. You were ignored and deprived. You asked Brigham Young for a divorce.
Yes.
What happened?
That didn't happen, but after that we were treated even less, more like animals. I wasn't treated nearly as good as his other eternal wives. And he forced me to support myself, so homeless again. I was very, very poor and really had no place to go. There was just hopelessness after hopelessness.
Okay. And Brigham Young did that to many of his wives, by the way. There was only a few he treated very well. And sadly, to sad end up Emily's story, she died December 9th, 1899. She was 76 years old. Her diary entries in the last years of her life indicated that she really never quite got over what the way she and her sister had been treated by Joseph Smith and Emma when they were forced to leave their house. Okay, we have a call coming in. Doug from Wyoming is calling. Hello, Doug.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air. You need to turn your TV down.
It's down.
Okay, what's your question?
Yes, I've enjoyed your program a little bit lately, and I haven't saw it for quite a while. The last time you talked, you were talking about the Mormon Church believed that their people could become gods, and that the Mormon Church believed in a Godhead, and you made the statement that the Bible only talks about one God.
Yes.
And so I've been doing a little reading and studying, and I'm just wondering if you'd read 2 Chronicles chapter 5, it says, "The house that I built is great, for great is our God above all gods." Does that sound like one God to you?
Yes, it does. Because there's
above all the gods.
Right. There's many false gods, and you will read in the Bible that there are many, many idols, idolatry, false gods.
Then why did she say that?
You need to turn your TV down.
Why do you say the Bible doesn't talk of only one God?
There's only one God who is a true God. All of the other gods are false gods. In fact, in Jeremiah, it tells us that any God who did not create the heavens and the earth will be destroyed. Therefore, they can't be a God, can they?
Well, no.
But there's false gods. You know, that's what the Ten Commandments, "Thou shalt have no other God before me." Anything that is greater to you than God himself is your God, with a little g. Not a big G, a little g.
Oh, uh-huh.
And that's what that means. Anything that we worship is our God. Some people worship money. Some people worship an idol. Any idolatry is worshiping a false god.
Well, in other words, anything you want to be a god can be your God.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people worship idols. They worship power, or they worship politics or money or their business, or they believe that there's other gods, and that is false gods. There are no other gods at all, not real gods.
Well, when she says the Bible does not talk about other gods, and it does talk about other gods, so...
Not about real gods.
It's interesting to watch her program. Not that I believe in most of it, but it's interesting.
Well, okay, thank you, Doug. Good night. Okay, line two, we have Latu from Salt Lake City. Hello, Latu.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
What's your question?
My question is, from the beginning, the Joseph Smith started the polygamy.
Yes.
And what time the Mormon come in?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that question. What time did Mormon come in?
Yes. He started the Mormon and Brigham.
Yes, he did. In 1830 is when the Mormon Church started.
And now the two are separate.
Yes, the Mormons gave up polygamy in 1904. At first they said they gave it up in the Manifesto of 1890, and actually they continued to live it kind of secretly, but in 1904 they really truly started to give it up. So the mainline Mormon church gave up polygamy, but many other splinter groups broke off from the mainline Mormon church because they believed that they were required to live it by God. And so they broke off from the mainline Mormon church and continued to live it. Does that help?
Yes. Now then, I know they look down, the Mormon look down the polygamy now.
Yes, they do frown on polygamy now, yes.
But why they not know that Joseph Smith started?
That's a good question. That's what many people are asking the hierarchy of the church. God doesn't change his mind. The Bible's clear about that. And so if God said that it was required for salvation, then why would he change his mind and say it's not required for salvation? God does not roller coaster us like that.
Okay, but which side do your program is?
Oh, we're not for polygamy. The Bible does not condone polygamy at all. You'll find polygamy in the Bible, and our program is to bring out the points of what polygamy was about in the Bible, and to prove from different sources that God has never required polygamy for salvation.
We not believe that. You guys talk about that. I think you guys did not read the whole Bible. God did not have any story like you say in the Bible, polygamy or Mormon in the Bible. They're not.
Well, Mormonism is not talked about in the Bible. Polygamy is in the Bible, but it is not required. It's not commanded. It is not condoned. And it is not part of God's salvation plan. But people in the Bible times did live polygamy, but that doesn't make it right.
Well, which in the Bible they say the Mormon in the Bible?
I'm sorry, the Mormonism's not in the Bible.
Yes.
No, it's not in the Bible.
Okay. And I believe that, like them, all the say they say, there's going to be somebody come later? No way.
I think that we're getting off topic here, Latu, so I would like to continue on. But thank you for your call.
Thank you, too.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, before we continue on, I need to weigh in, according to the Bible, regarding Joseph Smith marrying sisters. Of course, we can't let this get by without talking about that. In Leviticus 18, we are given a lot of guidelines about who can and cannot be married to each other. And in verse 6, it says that close kin are not to be involved with sexual relations or marriage relationships. And then the rest of the chapter, the verses, will tell us who is the close kin, who can and cannot, or cannot mostly. And we get to verse 18, and Leviticus 18:18 tells us that a man may not marry a woman and her sister. Now God and Jesus Christ both, he confirmed this, that the sexual union will make a man and a woman one flesh. That's what he said. If the husband is one flesh with his wife, then her sister is also considered his sister. That would be one of the principles of why God did not want the man to marry both sisters, a woman and her sister, while the wife was still alive. Now, this close relative relationship has to do also with the feelings and the interpersonal relationship between the two sisters. They necessarily must compete with each other for the attention of the same husband, and that obviously is not God's will. The story of Jacob in Genesis, and he married Leah and Rachel, and we read the story of their marriage, and it was very dysfunctional, and there was a lot of competition going on between the two, and that is a good example of why God does not want a man to marry two sisters. Just as sibling rivalry is the experience of children in a family, it would be that way with wife rivalry when a man marries a woman and her sister. And God says, don't do it. He's the one who said not to do it because it will vex the sisters. It will. Now, please remember that it's God who says not to do it, and therefore we are not to twist or misinterpret or justify or ignore the command that God has given for a man not to marry a wife and her sister. He just said not to do it. And if that's what God said, then we truly need to remember that and obey Him. So, Joseph Smith married more than one pair of sisters and a mother and daughter pair, which is also prohibited, and there's no biblical justification for that at all. Okay, line one, Tina from Salt Lake. Hello, Tina.
Hi, how
Hello?
Are you?
We're just well, thank you. How are you?
Good. Hey, I just wonder if I'm missing something. I've read DNC 132, and if it's still in the books, why don't they just continue practicing because nobody ever does anything anyway?
That's a good question. That is a good question. Tina, it would cause a lot of trouble for the mainline church. They have a big PR issue going on, and they would not want to tarnish their image. They want to get so far away from modern-day polygamists anyway. They just don't want to get caught up into that tangled web, I believe.
Well, and you just stated that it says no other gods before me.
Uh-huh.
And I watch Heart of the Matter, too.
Uh-huh.
And he says the way they get away with their thinking of becoming gods is because it says there will be no other god before me. They can have gods after me, but not before me.
But what's wrong with that thinking is that they believe that there is gods from eternity past and more gods being made for eternity future, and that God has a father who has a father who has a father, but, you know, you can't have gods before God, so therefore they've missed it on both ends.
Sorry, I don't get it.
Yeah, well, it's... when you go,
I just don't understand how they can get away with it when it's supposed to be against the law.
Well, that's a good question.
Even the FLDS, family you came from.
Yeah, I came from the Kingston group. And
How can they continue? Why aren't all those men in jail?
Well, right now it's gotten to be such a big issue that they can't. They couldn't handle all the thousands of them. But I've got some other calls coming in, and I appreciate your call.
Thank you, Doris.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Okay. Jody, line two. Hello, Jody.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
I just want to say that the Mormon Church has never quit practice in polygamy because the men can be married to more than one woman in the temple.
That's right, and we talk about this frequently on the show, and you're absolutely right. They can, and they still believe that they will live polygamy in heaven.
Right.
Right.
And
thanks.
So I think it's just really sad that they continually lie to their people and say, okay, we have quit it, but yeah, they can do it in their temple still today.
Yeah, well, the spiritual, I guess, is different than the temporal, so they can do that. Thank you,
okay,
Jody.
Thank you.
Uh-huh, good night. Okay, line three, we have Scott from Bountiful. Hello, Scott.
Oh. Hi. I have read the book In Sacred Loneliness, and it's really fascinating, and I'm glad you're bringing this out into the public.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. And also, I'm wondering, these new productions that are out, like Joseph and Emma, that you see on the billboards and things, do they say anything about polygamy?
No. They might hint at, just a light hint at it, but no, they bring it out of the question. They don't They don't bring it up. Not anything like, you've read in Sacred Loneliness, you know Joseph Smith was deep into polygamy and Emma fought it tooth and nail. But no, you don't find that in their big PR films.
Okay, thank you. That's all I had.
Okay, thank you. Good night. Okay, we have an off-the-air question. Do polygamists believe you must live a polygamous life in order to get into the celestial kingdom? Yes, they do. Some polygamists believe that if you have two wives, that's enough because that makes you a polygamist. Other groups believe you have to have at least three wives in order to get into heaven. And then some of the groups will say that they believe the more wives you have, the more worlds that you will have to give to your wife, so a greater God you will be, and the more children you will have in eternity, and the more wives and children and worlds you have, the more powerful and greater of a God you are. So it all is in the numbers thing. So I hope that answers your question. Well, we're getting to the end of our show again tonight. We want to thank our viewers for viewing and for our callers for calling. And we want to thank Emily and Dee Dee and Elizabeth for your willingness to do this. You have given us some great information and
You're welcome.
Appreciate it very much. Thank you. I'd like to make some closing comments here. When one studies the Bible carefully and we compare Scripture with Scripture, it becomes very clear that God's original purpose was not polygamy. Love is the central idea of the law, and love is the substance of the law. And it reveals God's nature because God is love. And since love is the central tenet of the law of the Ten Commandments, we find that loving God is it's brought into two commandments, total love God and love your neighbor, love each other. And when we love God, we won't do anything to offend Him. And if we love each other, we're not going to do anything to hurt or offend each other. Polygamy actually accomplishes the opposite of what the law is supposed to do and what it intends. Sharing someone's husband with another wife does not bring that love. It's hurtful, it's painful, and it offends the plural wives, and that is not God's way. He does not intentionally put us in those kinds of situations. Jesus Christ fulfilled the law of love in God's great love for us. Jesus died on the cross for our sins. He paid the price, and He opened up the door to heaven so that all who will go His way will be able to go without the polygamy. Polygamy cannot and does not accomplish something that only what God has done on the cross can accomplish. And so when you attempt to justify polygamy, you need to consider these things. You need to stop and wonder, can practicing polygamy really force out the salvation that Jesus Christ has already accomplished on the cross? It just can't be done. And so you need to just give up polygamy and take Jesus. We want to thank you for being here. Join us next week as we do the interview with Susan Schmidt and the LeBaron Blood Atonement. Thank you for joining us. See you in 2 weeks. Good night.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email at whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.